I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. After a long, quiet spell, our sun has been getting pretty rowdy as of late. Last week, massive solar flares were all the news, the largest eruptions seen in 6 years, so big they cause concern here on Earth. That's because these flares and the coronal mass ejections, which come later, spit out solar radiation that can knock out power, disrupt satellite communications, even endanger astronauts on the International Space Station. This time, no major problems were reported, but the solar show is expected to continue as the sun's 11-year solar cycle peaks in 2013. The fascination with the sun's activity is just one of many recent developments, which have astronomers and amateur sky watchers excited. They're also tracking the progress of a brand new Mars rover called Curiosity. It's the size of a small car and is set to touch down on the red planet in August. And space fanatics are keeping tabs on a probe called New Horizons, launched 6 years ago and now halfway to its final destination, the former planet Pluto. Today in The Exchange, our Sky Guys are here to bring us up to date on these stories and more. And let's hear from you. What more do you want to know about the sun's incredible activity lately? Do you have questions about the many probes that NASA's been putting out there exploring our solar system, including the one I mentioned, New Horizons, also another one studying the moon, and another one studying the asteroid Vesta? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We're also on Facebook. You can join the conversation there. Our Sky Guys are Mal Cameron, coordinator of the NASA Educator Resource Center at the McAuliffe Shepard Discovery Center, and an educator at the center. And Mal, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here, Laura.
John Gianforte is also here, co-founder of the Astronomical Society of Northern New England and an astronomy instructor for Granite State College and UNH. His website is theskyguy.org. And John, thanks a lot for coming in. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Laura.
Well, and both of you, let's talk about the sun's activity first. Boy, lots of headlines about this last week. But before we dive into what's been happening, can you just, John, define a few terms for us so that we get it right? I've heard a lot about solar storms, solar flares, coronal mass ejections. What are all these?
Well, all these things emanate on the sun, of course. And the sun, every day we see the sun, we don't think much about it. It looks pretty quiet, pretty ordinary. We often learn in school that the sun is an ordinary star, which it's anything but. But even ordinary stars throw temper tantrums. And the sun goes through an 11-year cycle of activity. And we had a minimum a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago, the sun was supposed to start to come out of this kind of dormant state. Not that there's no activity, but it's really low. So now the sun is picked up where it should have been. The sun is gaining in activity, and that means we see more sunspots on the surface of the sun, which is an indicator of internal solar activity. And when we see more sunspots, that means the chance for solar flares, which occurred on the 7th, and then coronal mass ejections, which is where the bursting forth of material, superheated plasma, actually leaves the sun. And if it's Earth-directed, that means it's set on a path that's facing Earth, a day or two and a half days later, because these particles, this material travels really fast, 1,000 kilometers per second, when it slams into the Earth's magnetic field, we can get a sky show, beautiful displays of northern lights, and it can have some adverse effects on orbiting satellites, like GPS satellites. It can also cause what they call ground currents in here on the Earth itself, and that can cause problems with our power grid.
Yeah, and so, I read that it doesn't really cause a problem for human health, but it does disrupt our technology.
It's even more dangerous now because we're all so dependent on technology and computers and power, where 200 years ago, the same kind of things could have happened, but no one would really notice unless you were observing the sun regularly.
Well, I love John's description, Mal, of the sun having a temper tantrum. That's great. And he's right. I mean, the sun goes through these 11-year cycles. And a couple years back, you and I were talking, and scientists were kind of puzzled. They said the sun should be more active by now, but it's quiet. So now we're seeing what we should have been seeing, you know, a couple years back.
It just was holding out for a better time, I guess. But, but yeah, that's what it happens on, as John said, in like an 11-year cycle. And I guess, John, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like it's really like a 22-year cycle. There's one cycle that's a little lower than the other.
Yes.
But generally speaking, every 11 years is a sunspot period. And so in between, there's a lull in sunspot activity. And it has to do with the churning, what's going on inside the sun, and the magnetic fields of the sun that kind of build up and start creating sunspots, and then they settle down for a while. The coronal mass ejections, as John said, the electromagnetically charged plasma is what it is that heads toward the Earth. Looking at a website this morning before I came in, there's a nice website called spaceweather.com, and you can go there and find out. You get a picture of the sun every day, and it will show you where the sunspots are and number them and explain a little bit more about what's going on. So it's a great way to do a little research, but also gives a prediction as to, based upon the sunspot activity, what are the chances we here in the mid-latitudes of the Earth might have a chance to see some aurora, the northern lights, as we say. And this morning it said that tonight is about a 35% chance that if it's clear, we might see a little semblance of glow in the sky.
That really?
Doesn't
what
mean
time?
It doesn't mean it's a sure thing. The best time is later in the evening, but sometimes you get surprised. I remember several years ago, I think it was 03, John, when we had that big Halloween type thing that was seen. It was so intense that it was seen way down to the Mexican border. And that's unusual. Not saying this will happen, but auroras are great if you see them. And if you do see them, it's because a few days earlier, a coronal mass ejection, or CME, if you want, bursted out from the sun and headed our way.
So what causes these sunspots, John? I mean, you say activity, but is this just different gases reacting differently than they normally do? I mean, I still don't really understand why the sun all of a sudden starts shooting out all this radiation.
Think about usually sunspot, first of all, the cause, the source of this last flare and mass ejection is a huge sunspot group numbered number 1429. And if you look at the website that Mal gave us, the spaceweather.com, I've been giving that out a lot because it's really got a lot of really easy to decipher information on it. You see, on the left-hand side of the webpage, you'll see a big picture of the sun with black dots all over it. Those are sunspots. And if you can see a sunspot on that image, all of those are bigger than the Earth. So if you think of sunspots as regions on the surface of the sun that are upwards of 1,000 degrees cooler than the surrounding sun, and think of underneath the sunspot, there's a horseshoe magnet. Usually sunspots come in pairs. And underneath, that we can't see, beneath the surface, linking both sunspots in a sunspot pair is a north magnetic pole and a south magnetic pole. And it's the sun's magnetic field that begins well below the surface that manifests itself in the sunspot. So when the sun is very active magnetically, it causes and creates a lot more sunspots. So on the peak of a sunspot cycle, which may actually be later than 2013 because it got off to a slow start, we'll see a peak daily sunspot number. You can also see that on the spaceweather.com. This morning, I think we were up to 103 sunspots.
That's a lot.
On the sun. Last year, there were numerous days. In 2011, there were many, 2009, when we were wondering where the sun was with its activity, there were 260 days with no sunspots. That's very unusual when the sun should have been becoming active then. Well, now it's doing what it should be doing, but even still, by the time the peak gets here in a few years, they're predicting that the peak for this solar cycle, number 24, will be the lowest in over 100 years. So overall, as Mal indicated, there are longer cycles on the sun that operate on longer timescales than 11 or 22 years that we're just beginning to understand now.
You know, both of you talked about spaceweather.com, but I wonder, Mal, are sunspots, solar flares, coronal mass ejections, do those affect the weather here on Earth at all?
I'm not sure they have a direct relationship to that. The big thing, as you said, was the technology, the satellites that are out there. We do have satellites that are way out about at a level where they're with the sun, facing the sun and giving us an alert, about a one-hour alert when we know there are particles heading our way. That gives people who control the satellites, if they have sensitive pieces on board that they're afraid might get zapped by this stuff, they can reposition those GPS satellites temporarily until that passes by. And remember, we talked about it could affect the electrical grid here on Earth as well. And it was in 1989, I think it was, where we had a big power outage here in the Northeast, and it turned out it was the result of a huge coronal mass ejection from the sun.
And you know what amazes me, Mal, is that, I mean, the sun is 93 million miles away. The fact that this stuff that it spews out is still so powerful by the time it reaches us, I'm surprised its strength doesn't get gobbled up by those many million miles in outer space.
Well, there's nothing in the way to impede it once it gets out there.
No friction, nothing.
John said it was traveling so many meters per second. What was that figure, John?
Well, depending on the strength and ferocity of the storm, this last one was traveling at a very high speed of about 1,000 kilometers per second.
So how many in miles an hour, how much would that be?
Well, that would be like 600 miles per second.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Even hard for us to wrap our heads around. Right. One last very quick question for you, gentlemen, before we go to a break. John, we have seen great pictures, as you both mentioned, of the sun. How do they get those pictures? Don't the cameras melt up before they get that close?
There are two spacecraft right now that are dedicated to the sun. One is the Solar Dynamics Observatory. And then we have STEREO, which is actually two spacecraft giving us a three-dimensional view of the sun. So in unprecedented detail, we're getting a look at the sun. We can constantly monitor it and be aware of these things as they happen. We don't have to wait for the stuff to get to us to know about it.
All right. Well, we're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we'll turn the corner and look at what NASA's future might be now that the shuttle program is over. NASA's administrator last week made his case to Congress. Caused some controversy. We'll talk about that coming up. Stay with us.
This is Leonard Nimoy. You can travel far and wide through galaxies and into strange and mysterious regions of Earth looking for the kind of informative and challenging programs that you discover regularly on public radio. In-depth news, stimulating conversation, and enlightening perspectives on our arts and cultures. As you explore the world and beyond on this station, you'll discover that public radio is indeed evidence of intelligent life in the universe, and it's smart to support it.
So set your course for 1-888-805-6477 or make it so at nhpr.org. Good morning. I'm Brady Carlson. I'm here with Rebecca Lavoie. This is NHPR's March Fun Drive. And if you want to support programs that even Leonard Nimoy says are stimulating, no matter where you go in the cosmos, then make your gift right now. And on top of all of that, everyone who donates today will be entered to win the brand new third generation iPad. But you got to do it today. Today. So don't miss out.
You do have to do it today, and you can give us a call at 1-888-805-6477. Brady and I are doing no small amount of geeking out listening to the exchange today. If the idea of local, national, and yes, today, interplanetary news and being able to participate in the conversation appeals to you, it's why you tune into the exchange. It's your opportunity to hear a breadth of topics and to chime in with your ideas and thoughts. You appreciate that, so why not support it? How about a gift of $10 a month? That's just $2.50 a week or 50 cents a day for this program. It's logical, as Leonard Nimoy would say, but as Captain Kirk might also say, it's right in line with the prime directive, your love for public radio. So give us a call if you're with your gift, 1-888-888-888. 805-6477.
Think of it this way. You're like the dilithium crystals that make our vessel do warp 5 when you make your gift. Today's program really is sponsored by you when you become a member. You're making this program possible. That donation helps to pay the electricity bill to keep our transmitters broadcasting across the state. It helps to pay for phone and internet service so that we can take your calls and add your emails into the conversation. And of course, it puts our producers and our hosts on the air doing what they do so well and bringing it right back to you. So make your gift right now at nhpr.org or call us at 1-888-805-6477.
A $100 donation gets you the NHPR member card. And if hearing this program brings science to your mind, there are some benefits in the NHPR booklet about science. There's a 2-for-1 admission to the Seacoast Science Center. That's a special benefit for the month of September. The Squam Lakes Natural Science Center, where you can get a 2-for-1 nature trail admission. The Sea Science Center in Manchester, which is offering a free admission with a paid admission. So not only does the NHPR member card pay for itself easily over the course of a year, but it helps you discover more about the world around you at a discount. And you could become a card-carrying member with a $100 gift. 1-888-805-6477. You can check out all the benefits at nhpr.org.
And remember, when you make that contribution today, you'll be entered in to win the brand new iPad. Now, this is the third iPad. I think of it as sort of the Search for Spock iPad to the current iPad's Wrath of Khan. This could be yours. This is the one that has the new HD screen. It has the highest resolution of any tablet, I believe, that's been released to date. And, you know, you think about the resolution that's already on the tablets. Imagine what that's going to look like when you're looking at this glorious HD screen. You can learn more about the iPad and enter to win it at nhpr.org. And while you're there, make a gift to support the exchange and to support New Hampshire Public Radio.
1-888-805-6477. I've heard it said that many, if not most, of the technologies we use right now were inspired by the fictional inventions of Gene Roddenberry. Think about it. On the Enterprise, they had communicators, not too far a leap from cell phones. On the bridge in Star Trek The Next Generation, they had touch screens, pretty similar to what we have now on devices like the iPad. Well, you can experience that. You can be a real Trekker. You can get that iPad 3, and getting in on that drawing is easy. We've set it up so that when you call, it takes less than 3 minutes of your day. So give it a try. 1-888-805-6477.
And when you make that gift here in the morning, you will inspire people who tune in later in the day to make their gifts, to join the community of listeners that make New Hampshire Public Radio strong. That'll make the pledges multiply like tribbles, in fact. Call us and make your gift at 1-888-805-6477, and thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and additional support comes from Antioch University New England in Keene, offering master's programs in counseling and dance movement therapy. Information at antiochne.edu. And from the New Hampshire Union Leader and newhampshire.com, opening up the stories, events, and resources essential to living in the Granite State. Mostly sunny, unseasonably warm today, highs 55 to 60 for the North Country, ranging to 65 to 70 in southern parts of the state. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're catching up with our two sky guys on all the astronomical news, including lots of activity on our sun lately with solar flares and storms that have been making headlines. We're going to be checking into on the many unmanned spacecraft missions, including the first ever to orbit an asteroid and another on course to land on Mars this summer. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. If you've got some more questions about all the activity on the sun that we've heard about lately, we can probably answer your questions about solar flares, coronal mass ejections. Also, if you want to talk about the many probes that have been making news, New Horizons going to Pluto, another one studying the moon, another one to the asteroid Vesta, our number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our sky guys are John Gianforte, co-founder of the Astronomical Society of Northern New England, and Mal Cameron, coordinator of the NASA Educator Resource Center at the McAuliffe-Shepard Discovery Center. And Mal, I want to turn to you next. There's been a lot of talk in Washington about NASA's future now that the shuttle program is officially over. NASA's Administrator Charles Bolden last week, made his case to Congress saying, hey guys, up next, sending astronauts to Mars. So what's the plan?
Well, I think Mars is a way down the road. There's a lot we have to know before we can send people to Mars. But we are sending spacecraft to Mars, and we have a spacecraft on its way there right now that'll be arriving in August. But, yeah, we have no more shuttles. We're retired as of last July was the last flight, number 135, 135 reasonably successful flights. We lost two shuttles, as we know, over that time period, the Challenger and the Columbia. But now those shuttles are going off to museums. There was a news story last night, I remember reading about one of them heading out to, I think it's Endeavour that's heading out to California. Discovery is going to end up at the Air and Space Museum, the second Air and Space Museum that's out by the Dulles Airport, which I can never remember the name. But they're going to get that one. And replacing one that they have down there called Enterprise, which was never flown in space, but it was one they used as a test vehicle for landings and so on to check its aerodynamics. That's going somewhere in New York City, I believe. And then the last one is Atlantis, which is going to stay at Kennedy Space Center. So these are now museum pieces. We would have loved to get one here in Concord.
Did you try?
Well,
I don't know where you'd put it, right?
Well, we'd have to build a whole new building. I mean, right. They would give you the space shuttle, but you had to transport it and build the building and show how you're going to protect it and keep it safe. And that would have been several million dollars. But in any event, we don't have anything on the docket as far as sending people into space. There's lots of probes out there. You mentioned the probe that's on its way to Pluto.
New Horizons.
We have Dawn, which is heading toward the asteroid Vesta, or it's actually in orbit around Vesta right now, taking close-up pictures of this asteroid. And there are many other probes that are out there we can perhaps discuss later. But as far as manned stuff goes, it is still on the books. And I believe that the first way they were talking about was to send people to an asteroid first. And they wanted to do something about that, try to go to an asteroid, not one that's in the asteroid belt, because the asteroid belt is out beyond Mars. But there are a few asteroids that float close by to us, closer to us than Mars. And one of the thoughts was to try to send astronauts there. And asteroids are mineral-rich resources, get some samples perhaps, bring it back. It would be still pretty tricky, but it would be a way to figure out if we can get people there and back safely, maybe we can go to Mars. The real difficulty with Mars is that if you send people there, that's a 2-year minimum time in space.
It takes 9 months to get there, right?
Well, depending on the distance of Mars, where it is when you start. But the main idea is that you have to, in order to fly something to Mars, for example, Curiosity, which is the probe that's on its way there now, you have to wait until Mars and Earth are at a particular alignment. The shortest distance is the best. You don't want to send a probe to Mars if Mars is on the other side of the sun, for example, right? So you want to wait until the alignment is correct. Because Earth is closer to the sun than Mars, we only take our 1 year to go in our orbit around the sun. Mars takes almost 2 Earth years to do that. So we're constantly passing by Mars in our orbit.
We lap Mars. If you're on the outside, Mars is running in an outside track. We're in the next lane inside. And even if we were traveling at the same speed, we would constantly lap Mars. But Earth is traveling a little bit faster than Mars, so we lap it even more rapidly.
Well, that's a big mathematical equation.
Yes, lapping.
I mean, but really, you have to figure out, you know, where is the optimum time and place to do this?
Yes.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Did you want to jump in there?
No, John? I mean, it's the math isn't that difficult, but it's important to get right, especially if you're on that spacecraft. So there's you can plan the trajectory to get to Mars in much quicker than 9 months, but you have to carry more fuel. A bigger spaceship costs more money, so we usually take the more efficient, economical route. We take longer to get there, carry less fuel, but it does mean you got to spend a lot of time outside the protective Earth's magnetic field that protects us from these solar flares and other things in space.
Mm. And then when you get to Mars, let's say it takes like 7 months or 8 months to get there. Once you land on Mars and you set up shop and start exploring, Earth is now disappearing. It's moving faster.
I see.
So you have to
wait.
It's out
of range. Yeah.
You have to wait on Mars until the Earth comes back around the bend behind the sun from your perspective on Mars before you can launch a trip back to Earth. And that's why it takes 2 years or more once you're out there in space.
So that optimum space, it's like the quarterback in the football game needing to wait till the receiver is in a certain place before he can pass
well,
the ball.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
Right.
So when's this going to happen, Mal? I mean, is there any timetable? I'm a reporter. I'm used to thinking in terms of deadlines. You know, what's the deadline for
all
this?
I wish I could give you a date. I don't know.
You know what the sad part is?
The earliest I heard it was like 2030 maybe.
The sad somewhere. Part is we have the technology and know-how today.
Right now.
We do. We don't have the spaceship, but we know how to do it. We don't need any great breakthroughs to let this mission happen. What we have to do is to find the vision and to make the decision, we're going to do this collectively to spread the cost to different nations, do it together. I mean, what better way to bring people together and work cooperatively towards something like exploration? It would be a great project to do. It would be expensive, but if we had 7 to 10 to 15 nations all contributing, we would spread the cost over a multitude of people, and we could get there well before 2030 if we decided to go.
Well, this is a time, and you well know, John, where everybody's talking about cutting back, not just the United States, but Britain, and my goodness, you've got the Greek debt crisis, and so it's not a time where people are feeling especially flush with cash.
But the funny thing is that that's very true. But we also have to understand what kind of stimulus the economies of the world feel when in the process of designing the new space rocket to get us there and the technology that we will employ to get there, those things will eventually make it to the economy. The iPad, the cell telephone, computers, laptops, all those things have their roots 20 to 30 years ago in the space program to make things small and lightweight so we could launch them. All those products make our world what it is today and make the economies of the world what it is today. So if you stop looking a month or a year down the line and trying to make your budget for next year and think of the long-term success of your economy, you need to think in terms of those long-range plans.
Our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us with your questions or thoughts is 1-800-892-6477. We talked about all the solar activity that we saw this month, just last week, massive solar flares causing some disruptions here on Earth. You can give us a call about that. Also, as we turn our attention to the possibility of manned missions to Mars, we've also heard about a probe that's heading to Mars, a big one, about the size of a small car, that'll land in August. You can join us with your questions at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. And let's see, Dan is waiting in Epsom. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. This is too fascinating. When I was stationed over in Europe at a NATO base, we got orders back to a solar observatory in the North Shore of Massachusetts. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. I was a weather forecaster is what I was over there. So anyway, I get orders back here, and we come back. And so finally, I, of course, arrive at the site. Of course, it's still there. And I'm thinking, wow, this is going to be great. We'll have all these huge telescopes, you know, aimed at the sun and this type of thing. Well, it turned out there were antenna dishes. We were a radio solar observatory. I thought, what in the world? Radio? And I didn't know anything about any of this. Well, of course, I got the wonderful crash course into solar observing, and in particular the radio side of it. At that site, we monitored 8 radio frequencies through an array of antennas, and we also had a very interesting, I don't know exactly how to describe it. It was referred to as the SRS, which was another array that monitored the really powerful solar bursts. But anyway, I was training in a new guy after I'd been there for about 2 years. On late October 2003, it was about 3 minutes to sundown, and all of a sudden, the horn went off, or the siren, I don't know how you call it, and that massive solar burst hit us.
Wow.
And it was the worst time of day to do a solar observing. Like I say, we were like 3 minutes from sundown. Well, if you could have looked at our 8 frequencies we monitor, Okay, they went off the scale. It was unreal. And we were calling the Handoff Observatory, which is in Palau, Hawaii, and they were talking to us, and they suddenly started saying, hey, our computers are locked up. Well, our computer's locked up. Our computer couldn't even crunch the numbers. And so we were calling around. People were saying, how powerful is this thing? How powerful is it? And we're like, we can't tell you. It's like the computers have quit working because just the amount of energy that was being detected on these 8 radio frequencies was just unprecedented. But
that's a great story, Dan.
Well, it's something to hear these gentlemen talking about this. And spaceweather.com, we had that on our computer all the time when we were on watch. You know, they're observing the solar sun. But then that is a superb website. But another thing we had it was a wonderful DVD presentation that had been in the IMAX theaters called Solar Max.
Mm.
And if anybody out there wants to really get an understanding, more of an understanding, I should say, about the sun and solar activity and how it relates to Earth, that is a superb DVD to get. It's a wonderful presentation. I think it's about 45 minutes long. But we would show that when we would have tours. You know, okay, why are we here? What are we doing?
Dan, that's a great story. And thank you so much for reminding us about that. Did you want to jump in, John?
I just want to say, Dan, if you do go to the spaceweather.com website, .com website, right on the front page, an amateur radio astronomer in New Mexico recorded the solar flare on the 7th. You can actually click on that and listen to the solar flare going off. It was very powerful. It was an X-ray class flare, which is the strongest classification, and you can actually hear about a 10-minute audio of that thing ripping through the sun on its way to Earth. It's just amazing, like you
that
say.
That is amazing, and I'm so glad you called, Dan, because, Mel, we see all these great pictures of the sun, and it's so beautiful and wild. I never think about it in terms of audio, even though one might argue I probably should since I work in radio.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Yes, the sun is a very powerful radio source, and that's another way that they study it. They study the different wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum, and radio is one of them. Another object that they do use radio to study also is the planet Jupiter, that has a strong radio signal from it as well.
All right. Well, coming up after a short break, we'll take more of your calls. Thank you for that one, Dan. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. I also want to ask you guys about getting commercial providers to take over the shuttle's functions and what the plans are there. And we'll talk a little bit about some really cool stuff happening in the night sky this month. So all that coming up. Stay with us.
It's NHPR's fundraiser, NHPR, New Hampshire Public Radio. Radio made right here in the Granite State for Granite Staters. Of course, we do carry programs we don't make, like All Things Considered Morning Edition Here and Now, Radio Lab. But being New Hampshire Public Radio means serving Granite Staters, which means making radio right here in the state. The Exchange is a great example of that. What public radio New Hampshire style sounds like.
And what do you think the implication is? I mean, this is sort of the big question overhanging this whole thing. What's the implication of not having a civically educated society?
I think it's hard.
How does that play out?
I think it's hard to run a democracy unless you've got effectively run a democracy, participate in a democracy, which requires participation by definition, if you don't understand what in the world it is you're participating in. And
NHPR is a community of radio makers and radio listeners. You tune in to be entertained, informed, and inspired, and your membership makes New Hampshire Public Radio possible. Here's how you can help.
You can call this number. It's 1-888-805-6477. Or you can visit our website, nhpr.org. Good Monday morning. I'm Brady Carlson here with Rebecca Lavoie during NHPR's March Fund Drive. And we're asking you to participate. If you're listening to The Exchange and saying, they don't need my support, someone else will do it, I find your lack of faith disturbing. It is time for you to make a gift to support your public radio service. And, of course, everyone who donates today will be entered to win a brand new iPad, the third generation iPad that's on its way out this month. You don't want to miss out on that, so make your gift right now.
By calling 1-888-805-6477. You can throw your favorite Star Trek or Star Wars reference our way when you do. As much as you think you know about New Hampshire, there There is always something more to learn and no shortage of people to learn it from. Like today's science experts, Mal Cameron and John Gianforte. They're just two of a large crew of the regular guests the Exchange brings in from around the state to lend insight into big ideas. These are the right people to tap into about this topic, which is critical to the mission of the Exchange. If the Exchange is like the Millennium Falcon, Mal Cameron and John Gianforte and all of the regular guests are like Han Solo and Chewbacca, necessary to keep the program relevant. And that's why you tune in every day. So how about supporting it? 1-888-805-6477.
They've got it where it counts, and they made a lot of special modifications themselves. You know, an interesting fact about today's edition of The Exchange, this actually didn't come together until about mid-Friday afternoon. Sometimes the shows are able to be booked well in advance. Other times, they come sort of down to the wire, and The Exchange producers sort of roll with the punches in that way. They're ready for whatever is coming their way. And they're able to do that because listener support makes that possible. With your, say, sustaining membership of $10 or $15 a month, you know that they'll be there to find the great programs, to find the topics, and of course find the guests for Laura to talk with about those topics every single weekday on The Exchange. So your gift is absolutely essential to keeping this ship going into hyperdrive at 1-888-805-6477.
Or going online to nhpr.org. Not only will you get entered in today's drawing to win a brand new third generation iPad, but how about this? For your gift of $100, how about a pair of tickets to see Ira Flatow? Ira Flatow is coming to New Hampshire. He is the Science Friday host, and he'll be sitting down with guess who? Brady Carlson.
I'm so excited about this. I got to tell you, I'm really excited about this.
I'm excited too. You guys will be discussing the latest trends and discoveries across so many scientific disciplines and taking questions from the audience. So you could put yourself in that audience and put your own questions to Ira when you call now with your $100 donation. You do have to call for these tickets. We will send you a pair of tickets, but we only have 8. So give us a call, 888-805-6477.
Or go to nhpr.org. Maybe when the pledge drives in the past have rolled around, you've said to yourself, look, I can't get involved. I've got work to do. It's not that I like listening without pledging. I hate it, but there's nothing I can do about it right now. Well, maybe there is something you can do. Maybe it's time for you to make that gift to New Hampshire Public Radio after all and become a new member. Or maybe it's time to renew your membership after a year or so. Now's the perfect time to do it because we do have the brand new iPad. That's the drawing of the day, and you really don't want to miss out on a chance to win that. You also don't want to miss out on the chance to support Laura Kanoi and The Exchange. You can do that right now at 1-888-805-6477, or you can stay on target at our website, nhpr.org. And thanks so much for supporting NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Union Institute and University, offering a hybrid doctorate in psychology and a low residency Master of Arts with a concentration in counseling psychology in Brattleboro, Vermont, myunion.edu. And from Froehling Energy, providing and installing high-efficiency wood pellet boilers for commercial, institutional, and residential space heating, online at froehlingenergy.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the controversy over contraception coverage in the Granite State. That's tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking with our Sky Guys about all the news in astronomy recently, and we want to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Mal Cameron and John Gianforte. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our callers. Mark's calling from Portsmouth. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, Laura.
Hi.
I am a major geek. But I'm also a major skinflint, and there's a real battle going on inside of me.
Geek versus skinflint.
But as I hear these guys talk, I mean, the geek is winning out. And it's just, from a geek point of view, it's so inspirational. And I suspect that for humanity in large would be so inspirational. And I know that for the skinflints like me, they have to justify the cost, but man, it's cool.
Well, I'm glad you called. And this was an issue, you know, just last week, gentlemen, when the head of NASA went before Congress and said, hey, here's what we want for our budget. And there was a lot of geek versus skinflint going on at that hearing. John Gianforte, what do you think?
Well, it's you should always be physically frugal. Always. Always, always, always. Because you're going to need money someday for something unexpected. But what I think is often more often than not neglected is the long-term benefits provided by innovations, ideas that we can't even conceive of right now, but in 10 to 20 to 30 or more years, they'll be an integral part of the economy. We'll be building things. If we don't do the cutting-edge R&D to make these things future products, where are those ideas going to come from? I can tell you that it's off the U.S. shores. It's someplace else that is spending money on R&D to make things into products.
So China will have its Sputnik moment, and everybody in the U.S. will.
Well, that's what will happen. We'll keep you know, nixing the budget, shaving the budget down at NASA, so we won't do manned space flight for a while. We won't develop a heavy launch vehicle. We won't. We'll neglect science missions like Opportunity and Spirit and Curiosity, Juno, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing's on the books, or very few missions are on the books being designed because we don't have the money. But the Chinese will make a breakthrough with their just launched last year space station. They'll make some headline and people say, wow, I didn't know they were so far ahead of us. And then we'll spend all kind of money trying to catch up, just like we did in 1957, when in October of 57, the Russians launched Sputnik and it took everybody by surprise. And guess what? So let's not do that. Let's spend a standard amount of money continuously and still be frugal, but let's not, it's either a fast or a feast or a famine. We shouldn't be doing that.
Well, in super short, Mal, okay, so the skinflint side of Mark, and thank you so much for calling, Mark, would say, yeah, well, who cares if the Chinese have an international space station?
Well, the Chinese are also planning to go to the moon at some point
as
well.
But so what? We've already been there.
Well, that still gives the illusion, at least down here, that, okay, they just got one jump ahead of us. There is this is kind of a hot button for me, too, because we have this fine line we have to walk. When you look at the total budget of the U.S. of A, and all the monies that go to defense and everything else, typically NASA's budget has only been about 1% of the entire budget. We've sent people to the moon. Maybe we spent a little bit more than that because it was a major thing. We talked earlier about sending people to Mars. So the point is that I would bet that we have gotten back technology-wise and product-wise and things that make our lives easier-wise much more than that initial investment of all those programs that we have done. And we can continue to do the same.
Well, Mark, I love your geek versus skinflint analogy. So thanks a lot for calling. And let's go next to Marie in Keene. Hi, Marie. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi, I'm Marie. I teach economics at Keene State. And I found out that a lot of our local industry is directly affected by the NASA budget.
Really?
Yes, we have firms doing high-tech precision where they make mirrors for satellites. They make all kinds of parts. And it does trickle down also. They make things like contact lenses. So, Precitech, Nanotech, Nathan Coaster, Corning, NetOptics, Janos, there's Accure Technics, there's Stingray. Those are directly affected when the NASA budget increases. So it's not simply in the long run we'd be better off. And these jobs don't just create jobs for engineers. They create jobs for high-tech machinists that are people with a high school education and some college who just have good brains and are not interested in putting their nose in a book forever. So those are great jobs. And it's true that you see that you get not just, stuff for space. You do get things like improvements for contact lenses I think it's a direct effect. Yeah.
Well, Marie, thanks a lot for calling. She's singing your song, John. You've talked a lot about spinoffs. So.
I'm with you, Marie.
All right. Marie, thank you for calling. Good to get those local examples.
It's a wonderful example.
1-800-892-6477 is our number here in The Exchange. Marie, thanks for that one. One more thing. We talked about NASA going before Congress just last week, talking about its budget. One of the issues that came up, Mal Cameron, was getting commercial providers to take over the shuttle's function of transport to the International Space Station. And there's some controversy around this. Some members of Congress say, yep, go commercial, let the private sector take over. Others are kind of upset about it. What's the plan here? How actively is the private sector working on taking over this sort of space bus mission?
Well, there are several companies out there. The one that is probably at the head of the list right now, as far as sending things into space, is a company called SpaceX. that they have their own center down at Kennedy Space Center, just outside the Air Force Station down there. I was down in that area last August and had a chance to tool around the Cocoa Beach area and check them things out. And there's this nice building by SpaceX. SpaceX is building transportation and capsules that will go. They have a capsule called the Dragon capsule that they put into orbit last year. And in fact, they're well known because they sent a wheel of cheese around the world and brought it back successfully.
I think I remember talking to you about that last time. Right.
we had a lot of fun talking about the cheese. But in any event, it came back unmelted, I guess.
well, it is cold in space.
Right. Well, the reentry is what they were worried about. But the point is that they are taking this Dragon spacecraft, and their next thing that they have to prove to NASA is their job is to try to send a spacecraft of the Dragon spacecraft full of supplies to the International Space Station. And if I remember correctly, sometime this year, they yes. will attempt to do that.
Yes. And will high-paying tourists be allowed to come along for the ride, or just professionals?
That isn't meant for tourists, but there are some tourist things going on. Virgin Galactic is doing one.
Yeah, you should talk about that one, because they're booking flights already.
To where?
To low Earth orbit.
Just like the shuttle.
And there are companies with plans on the books right now of building hotels in low Earth orbit for places, destinations for these commercial vessels to dock.
That's a nice view.
So the tourism industry, which is, you know, multi-billion-dollar industry on Earth, has a huge future in front of it. Once commercial spaceflight becomes a little bit more of a reality than it has been so far, that's say the next 3 or 4 years, it's foreseeable that in our lifetimes, for not a terribly lot of money, you could book a weekend excursion in low Earth orbit aboard one of these commercial spacecraft.
Okay, I know someone who would love to do that. You know, I imagine the liability you'd have to sign off, though, you know.
That's right.
I mean,
space is always going to be a dangerous place to do business.
All right.
I'm just going to add to that. The initial flights are just going to be called ballistic flights, similar to the first Alan Shepard flight. Just go up into space and come back down again, not into orbit right away. But those are already they have a waiting list for those rides. And sometime by the end of this year, Virgin Galactic hopes to send at least one of those flights up.
Fascinating.
So for
we can
what,
all be
$100,000
like Darius Alan Shepard. Very quickly, gentlemen, some great stuff in the night sky. I mean, John, every time I go out, I just go, wow, look at that. Look at that. What am I seeing?
Well, I mean, I'm getting so many emails and calls about the bright lights in the western sky just after sunset. And unfortunately, because we had to set the clocks ahead, that's coming, it's stealing the night away from us. But okay. In the western sky, we have Venus and Jupiter. Venus is the brighter of the two planets that you've seen, no doubt, over the last few clear nights we've had. We had some nice weather over the weekend. So Venus is the brighter. Jupiter, even though it's the bigger planet, it's further from the sun. It looks smaller. It looks a little bit dimmer. Then further to the east, almost on the other side of the sky, you'll see a bright orange star-like object kind of all by itself. That's Mars. When Venus and Jupiter descend below the western horizon, Mars will kind of dominate the whole night as far as planets are concerned. So those three objects are really bright and really distinct, and Mars will have an orange tint to it, so it's easy to find.
Right. All right, gentlemen, this has been great. I hope to talk to you in a couple months, and thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. Mal, thank you for coming in.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Mal Cameron, coordinator of the NASA Educator Resource Center at the McAuliffe-Shepard Discovery Center. John, always good to see you. Thank you.
Great to be here, Laura.
John Gianforte, co-founder of the Astronomical Society of Northern New England. Let's check in now with our March membership drive.
Good morning, and welcome to NHPR's March Fund Drive. I'm Rebecca Lavoie, senior producer of Word of Mouth, in the studio with NHPR's favorite son and Word of Mouth awesomator, Brady Carlson. And we are asking for your support to keep NHPR on the air and to keep it strong. And as an added bonus, Everyone who donates today will be entered to win a brand new envy-inducing Cool to the Max iPad. The new one we've been hearing all about, the third generation, but you've got to give today to get in on this drawing. 1-888-805-6477. You can also make your gift on our website, nhpr.org.
And what better point in the day to make a gift than in support of The Exchange, a program that's not only going to cover what's happening in New Hampshire, cover those issues, but cover so much more. I think of just what we've been hearing with Laura and John and Mal talking about space news. That's a regular part of the conversation here on The Exchange, but even more beyond that. They looked recently at 10 years since the No Child Left Behind law came into effect and how it's affected schools, the so-called right to work legislation and what that might mean for New Hampshire, a roundtable of New Hampshire residents reacting to events in Syria, people who have connection to the country there, talking about what it means to be here in New Hampshire and hear about what's going on over there. So many more conversations every single day, a conversation that you're drawn into, that compels you, that is worth your financial support at 1-888-805-6477.
It's easy to talk about some of the obvious costs of bringing you these programs, like equipment and staff, but one of the most powerful tools we use here at the station is the internet. That's how producers like Keith Shields and Alan Grimm find topics, guests, and flesh out the research that goes into writing a compelling one-hour program each and every day. Think about it. When The Exchange started, there wasn't internet at NHPR. Producers used to fax research questions to a local law firm who would look things up and fax the research back. Well, we have it now, but it does come at a pretty hefty cost, $1,500 a month, and your gift can help us defray that cost and keep The Exchange running strong. So give us a call, 1-888-805-6477.
I'm going to suggest the $100 contribution. It's a very typical amount to support The Exchange and to support NHPR, and you'll get a special incentive. We have a special thank you gift. Ira Flatow is coming to New Hampshire. He's the host of Science Friday.